Hello and welcome to Be Indie Now, a podcast about independent game development. I'm your host, Tobias Marks, and with me today is Amelia Davis.
Hello.
You know, Amelia, you're an artist.
Yes.
So when did you first start drawing?
I actually started drawing when I was 2 years old. I came home from preschool and couldn't say in words how impressed I was with the amount of kids. So I tried to draw it. And since then,
I love that you have like a specific story in your back pocket. You just pull.
It's not something I prepared. It's something I've known for a while. My mom had never seen me really draw before that. I'd never really picked up a crayon or anything before that. And she was just impressed because it wasn't scribbles. It was circles. And I just said, kids, it's the kids.
Nice.
So she was very impressed with that. And
yeah, I think a lot of artists I've talked to, they've always been doodling since as long as they can remember. It's always been a passion of theirs.
Yeah.
So did you like realize that as you wanted to, growing up and wanting to go to college?
I realized that certainly as I was growing up, that I wanted to be an artist. I didn't really think about it in college terms. I couldn't think about it as a job at all. I was told animators don't make money, and that's like the only sort of art job I could even comprehend as a kid. And I tried to be.
Like 2D animators.
I'm
like
thinking
Disney
2D
style.
Exactly, Disney style.
Which were kind of going away in that last decade or so because it's moving towards all 3D art.
Yeah, and I was actually inspired to start trying animation with Nightmare Before Christmas, and I started to try and do stop motion animation, which had more of my hands in it than really
any of that's a vibrant art form right now.
Yeah,
right. No, I love like stop motion. Every time just one of those comes out, it's always very impressive. But again, there's not a whole lot of people doing it.
Exactly.
Because it's really, really hard.
Mm-hmm. And so when I was in high school, I did art as well, but again, I just wasn't seeing how it was going to come into my future at all. And it wasn't until I was in college at Humboldt studying English that I realized that I wanted to do art and figure out a way to make it into what I do professionally.
So what did you switch your majors? You switched schools, right?
Yeah, I switched schools. I actually switched. I didn't know where I was going to go. I just kind of left Humboldt. I was like, I'm going to leave. And
why did you leave Humboldt? Do they don't have like an art program?
Well, they do have an art program. They have a great traditional art program.
All right. So why did you switch schools?
So I was drawing a lot of quick sketches, mm-hmm. and my graphic design teacher was like, you are a storyboard artist. You need to look at schools that focus on movies and storyboards and video games and all of that. We do traditional art here. We do great illustrative work, but we're not going to give you stuff to get into movies and be a storyboard artist.
So that's kind of the direction that you wanted to go, is that storyboarding?
That was certainly at that point I was like, whoa, storyboarding. I know what that is. Mm-hmm. I like that direction. And so I was like, okay, trust my teacher here.
Is that the first time you were starting to think about doing video game art?
Actually, it wasn't even then that I had yet started thinking about doing video game art. I was still kind of like, I have no idea what I'm doing. And it wasn't until I got to Cogswell and started helping out in the game club that I started thinking about doing some video game art.
So yeah, at Cogswell Polytechnical College,
yes.
They have a game development club, and they're always looking to recruit new artists into the folds and get them into game stuff. Mm-hmm. So that's like when you first started considering doing games?
Yeah, that's when I started to actually consider doing games.
Was that just like, oh, I'm just going to do games while I'm here, and then I'll go into movies when I graduate? Or were you starting to like really get into games?
There was kind of like games, movies for me, as I do a lot of concept and illustrative work that is inspirational. And those flip between movies and games so readily. If you look at an art of Borderlands and an art of Wally, I don't know. I'm just pulling the first names that have come out of my head here. You're going to notice that they're painted, they're drawn, they're sketched, they're done in a 2D form that ends up looking like Borderlands could have been a movie, you know? So they
yeah, the quality is starting to get closer and closer.
The quality is just so high on both that it became obvious to me when I started researching into that, that those switch between the concept artists actually switch between the genres very quickly, very readily. So
makes sense.
Yeah.
So when did you graduate?
I graduated in 2012, on December 12th,
nice.
2012.
That's a good date.
12-12-12, yeah.
Yeah.
That was really cool. But I had been doing work before that. I had been doing a lot of freelance work outside of school as well before that.
So. Cool. So how did you start freelancing? Like, did you just...
I started by doing a children's book, which is just come out, Bubble Trouble, and I started by doing illustration for that and working with the author on creating the illustrations.
How did you like fall into that job?
It's kind of like through friends sort of thing. Like, we got together. I vaguely knew her from the community that my mom is a part of, the church community that my mom's a part of. And so I knew her. I'd taken classes from her before on storytelling. But I hadn't really gotten to know her one-on-one. And it was just kind of somebody mentioned me to her and somebody mentioned her to me. And we were like, oh, hey, that might work. And so then we ended up, it was just sort of fell into that. That sort of job, which was really great.
Cool. So what did you do after you graduated? Did you start taking more freelance work?
Yeah, I started taking some more freelance stuff. I also started up a company while I was still in school with Brody Brooks. We started up Pixel Sunrise to make our own games. And I also started doing artwork for comics and stuff like that, and doing some coloring for comic book pages.
That is a lot of the stuff you're doing concurrently.
I am doing a lot of stuff right now. It certainly is quite a lot.
Do you like taking on like a bunch of different tasks? Does that help you in your process?
No, it doesn't help me in my process, and all artists out there
some people
really...
like talk about, you know, being able to switch from one project to another, prevents artist block or writer's block.
It is nice to be able to switch, most definitely. I don't recommend having more than three different things to switch between.
Yeah, there's a point where that becomes a bad idea.
Yeah, for me, I've noticed that when I've got three things, it's like the sweet point. If I've got three different projects, generally one that's my own personal project, so then two outside projects, I'm really happy because I can just...
So do you find it like you have to have that personal project, you have to have that personal ownership over something? Like, you couldn't have three external?
For me, yes. I know people who that doesn't matter to them as much. But for me, I also tell a lot of my own stories. I was an English major for creative writing at Humboldt, because I would write a lot of my own stories. And so I was like, I want to tell my own stories. I want to do my own work. And so for me, that third project that's my own personal little project is very important.
Does it go the other way? Like, you like doing other people's work as well, or would you be happy doing all of your own projects?
I enjoy getting to do other people's projects as well, because I get to see a whole different idea process come through, a whole different story that maybe I would have never even conceived of, and I still get to be a part of it. I still get to be working on it. And so that's really exciting for me, and it broadens my own knowledge and my own base and sort of like that. And
cool.
If that makes any sense.
So like, when you talk about, you know, you started a company with Brody, mm-hmm. does that count as your own stuff? Cause you were, you know, the head artist in that and had control, or do you consider that outside work? You know, it's, oh, that's not my own personal comic. That's
not my personal.
I only own 50% of this.
Well, yeah, it does really kind of feel like the more, I only own half of it sort of thing. And it is to a degree, personal project, but it is also to another degree something that I consider an outside project because it changes and we work off each other, and I think that's a really good thing.
Yeah, so kind of the best of both worlds, right? Where you get that new experience, get that outside feedback, but then you also have that personal ownership.
Part of it's, yeah, the personal ownership. And one project that we have kind of just floating in the background is actually one that I've taken a lot more ownership over that I'm playing with. And I'm playing with a couple of them that I've taken a bit more ownership over, but they're not our major project right now.
So how many projects are you like doing concurrently at Pixel Sunrise?
Pixel Sunrise. Currently we actually have 3 open projects.
Wow. So like Pixel Sunrise is like just one of many things you're doing, and in Pixel Sunrise
is 3 projects. Exactly. Yeah. But 2 of them, are just sort of on a back burner right now because we realized we're an indie company. We have 2 people.
Yeah, you need to start focusing on little, one thing.
Yeah, they're too big. Those 2 are both story-based, and story-based projects we're fighting.
Yeah, they take a while. Why don't we rewind a bit? Like, okay. Let's talk about how you met Brody, how that all started.
Right. So Brody and I met at Cogswell Polytechnical College in the Project X rooms. Project X is a group of some of the students at the school that are making a film, a short film, and I was the storyboard artist in that project, and he was a modeler, and we just kind of met through that, and I also met a few other friends, and then we all became part of the bike club, and we were like...
Were you like ride your bikes together?
Yeah, we'd ride our bikes and to places. And
so how was that transition from movies to games? Because I know Brody, he's been on the show before. He's totally a games guy.
Yeah.
He does modeling too, so he's worked on, you know, like those films and stuff, but how did he, you know, convert you into getting to a game company? Was that a hard process, or was that just kind of a no-brainer?
You know, I don't know how I got talked into it. I really, when I was in Cogswell, my focus was movies, 'cause that's what I had seen most of my life growing up. Games was a different thing, and I was like, I'm not totally sure. I'm kind of like on the outside of game club, and I didn't immerse myself in it. Comics are another big thing, but then it was like, let's start a game company, and I was like, okay. Well, that sounds cool. Wait, okay. Yeah, okay. Lots of people are doing games. That's fun. I like doing games. All right. I like playing games. And I don't know. I just got into it. I got excited. I liked the idea of working on... I got to work on Clark and Dagger with Brody, which was a summer game that we tried to do.
A student project. A student project. Game club. Yeah.
And that was a lot of fun. And so I was like, I'd like to continue doing this. And I sort of just spun into games at that point.
So like what kind of art in particular were you doing on those projects?
On those projects, I was doing primarily concept art, and overseeing the creation of the in-game art for the characters. Mostly the character designs was what I was focused on.
And so what did you start doing when you, you know, became half of Pixel Sunrise? You started doing like everything, right?
I started doing everything, yeah.
So how is that like technical art different than, you know, storyboard and concept art? Because in that storyboard concept phase, you kind of have a blank canvas to work with. Like, you can draw on anything, just communicate an idea. But game art requires a lot of technical specification. It needs to be, you know, a certain amount of pixels. It needs to have certain kinds of compression rates.
So when I started going over to from just doing the concept, with the concept I was just sketching. It was a pencil and a paper and maybe a pen and paper. I love working on pen and paper. But when I went into, we went on our first game, we actually did watercolor, and I had to take the watercolors that I painted and bring them into the computer.
So you painted watercolor by hand.
So this is
scanned it in.
Yes.
And then did you convert that into art, or did Brody?
I learned how to do it. Brody showed me a lot of this is how you make sure it can tile. And this
did you do a lot of Photoshop stuff in college?
I did do a ton of Photoshop.
So you were already familiar with the tools.
Very familiar with Photoshop. Not so familiar with Flash or Illustrator. but very familiar with Photoshop.
What about like 3D stuff, or were you focused on 2D?
I was focused on 2D. I really didn't get into the 3D scene at all. For me, the 3D scene is like a whole different thing. I love kind of doing the concept stuff. I'm good at 3D when I do it, but I don't prefer to do it. It was something that I didn't find a passion following, so I was like, no passion, no follow.
Fair enough. I mean, that's what also nice too about the indie scene is that it's had this huge resurgence in 2D games.
Yes, yes, which I love.
They're easy to make, but also stylistically people have been into it.
Mm-hmm.
And both, like, there's that pixelated, you know, look, but there's just general 2D looks good as well.
So what you were talking about, though, with like the technical transfer over, the most difficult was when we started Flight of Taito. And
that was your second game.
That was our second game. Crazy Comet came out.
That's the watercolor. Yes, Crazy Comet's the watercolor one. It's on iOS, right?
Yes.
Okay. Gotta get the plug in there.
I think right now it's not quite out on iOS. Brody's fixing a bunch of stuff got it kicked off. And so I think it's coming back out.
Probably you guys haven't updated in a while, huh?
Yeah. So it got kicked off of it because we hadn't updated it in a while because we were focused on other projects. But last time I talked with him about it, it sounded like we were fixing those problems and it was going to come back out. So
cool.
But that one, we had a few people who really liked that one. So that was cool. And then we did Flight of Taito, which we were really excited about. And I was like, I'm going to do it in pixel art.
And so you've never done pixel art before?
I had never done pixel art before. I had no idea.
Big chunky pixels everywhere.
I just really didn't know what I was doing. But I turned out some really beautiful pixel art for it.
Yeah, no, I can attest. Like, Flight of Taito, it never actually made it out. Like, spoiler alert, where the story is going. But, oh, my God, that game is so pretty.
It was gorgeous. And then we got it into a playable version so that we could submit it to the IGF.
Mm-hmm. And you were making it in the Corona SDK, right?
Yes, Corona. But we got it. And I had to know, like, the pixel widths of everything that I was doing. And that was so mind-boggling for me that I couldn't remember it.
Yeah, because you were just, like, big before, like, right?
Yeah, no, everything I work on, because I do comics, I do my own comics a lot. I'm working on Dead Hand Used Bookstore, which you can find at deadhandcomic.com. And that one, I work at 600 DPI. I mean, 600 DPI.
Yeah, that's pretty intense, right?
Yeah,
there.
I kill my computer a lot.
Yeah.
I work at 600 DPI, and my images are huge. Like, I could print them out as gigantic posters. So that was, I came from working huge to having to work at 28 pixels. Like, 28 pixels.
Yeah, that was so hard.
It was really, at first it was quite mind-boggling, and Brody could do better pixel art than I could, which I was jealous of. And I was like, no, this will not happen. So I studied a lot of pixel art, was looking at a ton of it, and
how did you study it? Just by looking at other games?
Yeah, I would look at other games. Just for me, I look at the artwork and I try to deconstruct how it was made. So when I'm learning a new style, I look at what I'm looking at, and which I learn new styles all the time. And I go like, well, how do I think I could make it? What colors were laid down first? What colors were laid down second? What were laid down third? What do they do reflective light? Are they just doing cell shading? It's all sorts of different shading ideas and stuff like that. But I deconstructed a lot of them, and I learned a lot from doing that. And then I would apply it to Flight of Taito, and it was just getting prettier and prettier. And I was like, this is good.
So that project never actually saw the light of day.
It never saw the light of day because,
like, it wasn't the art, I can assure you guys. I think you still have the website. I forgot what URL is.
We
but.
Do still have the website up. We're pixelsunrise.se, so it's P-I-X-E-L.
It's Pixel Sunrise, but it's the last two letters.
The last two letters
dot
are
over.
Yeah, it's dot S-E.
Yeah, it looks better than it is to communicate. There'll be a link in the show notes.
Yeah, okay, cool. But so we're... there, and we do still have Flight of Taito art up, and it is not, it's not canceled. We still want to do something with it because we really like it.
So that's one of those ones you put on hold, like you mentioned before.
Yeah, we just realized it was going to be one of those projects that we're spending 3-4 years on because we had multiple worlds. We had this entire
kind of going for like that Zelda style story adventure.
A Zelda style story adventure.
I guess Fez might be a good comparison too. But you don't want to compare yourself to Fez because that took 6 years to make.
It's a beautiful game. I can understand how that thing took 6 years to make.
Yeah, no, it looks like it had 6 years of polish.
I'm actually, considering the size of their team, I'm shocked that it only took 6 years.
Yeah, that game has so much stuff in it.
And I'm like, everybody who's angry at them for taking 6 years should go and try and make it.
Well, no, I mean, it took forever to make, but it's not like, oh, they were sitting on their hands for 3 of those 6 years. No. Like, it looks like, oh, yeah, that would take 2 people 6 years to do all of this polish and
those levels. It's beautiful. I mean, it takes groups of 30-plus people to make the game a game of that quality in 2 to 3 years. 30-plus. Yeah. You're telling 2 people to do the job of 30-plus people, and they only take twice as long. Seems good.
Yeah, that is a pretty good ratio. It's a good way to look at it.
Yeah. So I was actually impressed that it only took 6 years for me, because I was like, dude, that art, it's beautiful. And I know art takes a while. People don't get that.
But to be fair, too, when you're trying to run a business, like they had a bunch of funding from the Canadian government, I think. And you guys don't have that.
We don't have any funding. We have no funding. We have whatever we've got in our pocket or whatever jobs we pick up on the side right now. So we're thinking about Kickstarter. We keep throwing the word around between us and going like, hey, Kickstarter.
You totally should.
Yeah, no.
But I guess you two got busy because you've been doing your freelance stuff with the other gigs, and Brody also has been doing some freelance, and then he now works at WayForward.
Yes.
As a designer there.
Yeah, so.
So he's still doing Pixel Sunrise, but it's like both your guys' secondary job.
Yes, secondary.
Well, I don't know. Do you consider it your secondary or primary?
It's hard to say. I don't really have a primary job. It's one of the primary jobs for me.
Okay.
I have too many primary jobs right now. I have more than 3 right now, so that's too many.
You got to start paring down. What are jobs you have right now? Just a lot of different clients for freelance, or?
Yes, I have a number of different small clients for freelance. I'm also working with Yezar Media Group on Candy Cave right now, which is my the one that I probably spend the most amount of hours on during the week.
How many hours a week are you working there now?
I think I average about 18 right now.
All right, so decent part-time job level on it.
Yeah, and which is really nice for me because it still gives me a lot of time to work on my other stuff that I have.
So are your typical clients, when they hire you as a freelancer, do you, work on a particular piece and then you're done, or do they hire you for like a month and then you work for that month and move on? Like, what's the process there?
That can really depend on the project that happens. So I'm doing a cover for a book, Rosaria Venice by Aaron Miner, and it's just the cover. I'm doing the cover. So it's one piece, and I've just been hired to do the one piece. But for Yezar Media Group, I'm doing a lot of concept. I'm doing texture art. So it's kind of like until we don't need you anymore or until I've,
And then they're working on a game, and with games, there's kind of an infinite number of stuff that you can
exactly
do. Because we did all the art that's needed. Let's add more features and get more art.
Exactly. Yeah. Pretty much any feature you add is almost going to have some art with it. And I've been finding that part of what I do there is I think about how can we do that with the least amount of art needed. And help them pare that down.
Yeah, so you're thinking with the technical mindset now. You're thinking about file size and all that stuff.
File size.
That's actually probably like...
Sometimes I forget
about
file size.
Do you think working in pixel art helped you get to be a better game artist, where you started thinking about small sizes and
technical? Yeah, so that certainly helped. I think the thing that helped more was just starting Pixel Sunrise with Brody and actually sitting down and trying to figure out what this whole process was before Pixel Sunrise. I didn't really have a concept about any sort of programming. I still don't know very much programming, but I have an idea about what you can and cannot do. You're not going to be able to have it so that, you know, like things just like radiate light very easily. I understand that there's like a whole sort of like light system and texturing and particle system and all this sort of stuff just to make something glow in a game. And it's different. You treat a glowing object completely different than a matte solid object that's opaque. And so it's like I've gone into a lot of learning about limitations. So I can't have glowing rocks everywhere. Because they're like, that is just too memory intensive, you know, that would just...
You can't have particle effects going off every single object.
I can't have, like, particle effects on everything. Can't I just have particle effects on everything?
Yeah, just games, just nothing but particle effects. I think that's, like, Geometry Wars.
Yeah, something like that, right? So there's, I learned the limitations, and each game has different limitations. Like, some games, they're like, well, all we do is particle effects here, too. Have fun particle effects, but other ones are like, whoa, we don't even have an engine written.
So, like, what kind of art style are you working with the Yazar Media Group?
Right now, we're doing a 3D. It's in 3D. It's a low poly. I'm not doing the models, but I am designing, and I do have to think about low poly when I'm designing.
Yeah, so you're doing the concept, the character sheets.
Yeah.
Are you doing any of the texturing?
I am doing some of the texturing, too, which I keep in mind as well when I'm designing. Can I do that as a texture versus have them model that out?
Yeah, because you're trying to keep the polys low.
Mm-hmm. So
is the low poly count for technical reasons or stylistic reasons?
It's I think it's more so that the game will run smoothly. Because it is a networking game, like you and I sitting in the same room on the same network can play together, but because memory reasons, I guess, I wouldn't be the best.
That's a technical question to the person not doing the technical.
I'm not doing the technical. I have the idea, though, that there is a memory issue, sort of, whatever, and the less polys equals...
Yeah, more performance you're going to get, more characters on the screen, easier and faster to load.
Yeah, for me, I don't understand all the technical side. I wish I did, but I came to the realization that although I know I could learn the programming side, that would take away time from me learning the art. And I'm an artist. That's what I do. That's what people need me to do. And so I'd much rather spend the time learning about how to make sure that my art can work with the technical side without overbounding, you know, making them go like, wait a second, flashing colors on their t-shirt. I don't think so.
So do you mind if I ask, like, how many hours a week are you working in general?
Am I working
like,
in
are you
general?
Pulling 90 hours a week with your three different projects?
Probably. I mean,
do
I work.
Do you keep track of that, or you just like, don't even think about it?
I don't even really think about it all that much. But like, so yesterday, I've started off the day by working with Candy Cave and Yazar Media Group. And I came home and I started working on my own projects and other people's projects and a commission that I just got. And I was up until 2 o'clock in the morning.
So you're still taking like random, like one-off piece commissions, like book covers and stuff like
book
that.
Book covers. Sometimes people just want a family holiday card and they're like, can you just draw me a family?
Are most of your commissions like not game asset based?
Yeah, actually most of them are not game right now.
In the past, have you had people hire you for like quick amounts of game art?
Not really. No. What I've seen, like when people approach me with game art, it's I've been approached about a couple of smaller game project pieces recently, and that's because they have a team of artists of about five different artists, and they need one more to just get a few technical drawings out. So of characters and turnarounds and stuff. Which
so it's like, draw this character in this position, you know, these specific resolutions.
Yeah, draw. Well,
do you take
actually,
those jobs or they don't interest you as much?
Oh, no, they interest me. It's just they haven't come through all the way yet. But in the past, the jobs that I've been approached on is, hello, you're the only artist and I've got this entire game and it's, can you do that for me?
Yeah, that's a lot of
can
work.
Can you do that this weekend? But, you know, and can I not pay you? And I've had a lot of people go like revenue share. And I'm like, whoa, wait a second. I got
Yeah, you have to be careful of that stuff. It's like, I don't know anything about making games. I don't know anyone who can do art. I'm going to hire you and I'll pay 20% of the nothing that I'll make.
Exactly. Exactly. And I'm like, wait, no. I get too many requests of people going like, can't pay you, but can you do my art? That I'm like, no, I can't. Sorry.
So, like, what do you think is the most difficult part about being a freelancer? Is it just that dealing with the clients?
For me, the most difficult part is, having to first tell them I need to get paid for this, because it's like the hardest thing. I feel like they're going to hate me or something if I'm like, I need money. I need to eat. Can you give me money so I can pay my rent and my bills? But many times I love it when they come up and they're like, we're going to pay you. What's your rate? And that's like, if you're looking to hire an artist or whatever, it makes it so much easier for the artist. Cause I get scared and I get a little bit like tightened up if they're like, oh, I'm making this really awesome game. Can you do the art? Because that tells me, because I've heard it so many times, can you do the art for free?
Yeah, they say, can you do the art? And then they don't elaborate. Yeah. We're going to pay you after.
Yes, and we're going to pay you. We will, you know.
Do you have, like, your rates posted on your website, or do you do it on a per-client basis?
It's a per-client basis. And I will work with the client. I am very open to negotiation on price. The first price that I give does not have to be the final price that is settled on. And you'll find that with, I think, many artists, because we're like, what? I think this is what.
You know, they're hiring you based on, we need, you know, 10 assets versus I want to work for you all X hours. It's got to vary, and versus also how difficult it is and how much you'll have to learn to be able to do it. But can you give, like, listeners out there just a general idea how much a high quality artist costs?
So,
like, let's just say in a per hour basis, like per an hour of your time.
For an hour of my time right now, with indie game companies, I do $25 an hour, and that's indie game companies.
That's still like pretty cheap.
It's pretty cheap. Bigger companies that are much more established that are making lots of money, they don't get $25 an hour. If it's an indie game company that's coming to me, they're like,
if EA came to me,
it'd be a different story.
You know, you guys can afford to pay me some more than that.
Yes. And I do that because I want to see these games come forward. The independent games are, I think, some of the best, the most creative games out there.
It's probably just a lot better to work with a smaller team, too.
It's great to work with a small team. It's a lot of fun. But I just feel really passionate about people getting their stories, their ideas, their games out there. And so that's why I do offer that lower price. And I know you can. That's a very common price as well for independent game development. For pieces, like for when people order just like a concept art drawing or something, I've heard ranges from about 100 to 150 per illustration, full illustration of concept art.
How many hours does it take you to make an illustration?
That can really vary.
Yeah, I guess that really depends on the illustration.
If the illustration is a pencil drawing that is
certainly multiple hours.
It's certainly going to take multiple hours. Some people can just crank them out and they're just really rapid, really fast. Other people, they take all day. So it can really just depend on the piece, what kind of stuff you're doing. So like if I'm just cranking out different designs and you're like, give me 20 different ninjas, that might take me 2-3 hours to crank out a sheet of paper that's got 20 different ninjas on it.
Yeah, it just depends.
And that's rough ninjas. I'm not talking colors or anything. If you want it colored.
Yeah, well, more time, more quality.
Yeah, more time.
So you're just finding work through friends, mostly through connections.
Friends, connections.
Do you have any like you have a website? But
I do have.
Do
a
you
website.
Like put yourself out there? Do you go and have an Odesk account?
Or I do anything? Have an Odesk account. I just started my Odesk account. Nobody can find me because I hid myself while I'm working on. while I'm working on Candy.
Yeah, it sounds like you have too many projects going on right now.
I have so many projects going on right now that I do not want more people approaching me quite yet. So
I guess
like,
finding work hasn't been an issue for you.
And no, it hasn't. I've had a lot of people approach me about doing work for them.
Well, to be fair, how many like people approached you have been those good kind that say, and will pay you?
That's like 10%. I would have to say 10% of the people who approach me actually are willing to pay me, which is sad. I mean, I've been reading a lot of articles recently on how to talk to people about this, because I'm like, how do I tell my friends that I've got so much work on my plate that no, I can't draw them the one picture that they really want me to draw them for free. I can't do that. I stay up till 2-3 in the morning doing work, and then I try and wake up at 8 so that I can continue doing work.
That doesn't sound entirely healthy.
I haven't really seen too much of a day off except when I get sick. That's my days off, when I get sick.
Yeah, you should take some preventative days off, you know, like before you get sick.
Yeah, probably.
Yeah, that... Yeah. No, seriously, that work-life balance is really hard, especially when you're working from home.
It is very hard, but I mean, at the same time, I do love doing what I'm doing, and I'm working on the balance part, getting that all leveled out, and I'm getting a lot closer to that, which is fantastic.
So, like, along these lines, like, do you have any horror stories of a particular client who is just awful?
I don't
have to name names.
I don't have huge horror stories. Like, I've heard some really bad horror stories where, like, you've worked 20 plus hours and then they never paid, and they have all the artwork, but they've never paid for it. And those are really scary. I think the worst ones that I've had is where there's just no communication back or forth. I can't get a hold of the client. I'm like, hello, what am I doing? I've done all the work for you, and now I'm at a point where I'm waiting for you to tell me if I should do anything more or if that's good or what. I think the craziest one for me, and I wouldn't call it totally a horror story because I did get paid for it, but we thought we had a design.
Yeah.
It was set. It was solid. I'm going to say it in like horror story mode. It was set and solid in design.
It was a dark and stormy night.
And then they came back and wanted 20 more. Brand new.
They would like, absolutely, no, just pay me this much.
Well, so, you know, I was fine with it. I loved doing it. I loved doing that project. But we thought we had a really good design. We had a solid design. They liked it. Everybody's liking it. Then they came back and they were like, no, we need to start from scratch. And that was,
did you like charge them twice? Be like, well, I did all this work. You're going to pay
me for
no,
that. Yeah, no, I did. It was in the contract. It said, you know, any reworking that's
so
done.
That's a really good point. Cause yes. You're professional. Uh-huh. You got the contracts.
Yes, contracts.
That's probably something we should emphasize to the freelance artists and wannabes out there.
Yeah.
Get contracts, because that saves you in these situations.
Even really simple contracts. Like, I really hate the ones that are 20 pages long that are like, I will not charge you health insurance. I'm like, okay. Health insurance.
Yeah, I mean, like, when you're doing independent contracting, it can be hairy. I know, like, for when I've hired people, I usually go through something like Odesk, because
Odesk
they deal with a lot of that for me. Odesk, they make sure that the you know, people are filing their taxes and whatnot.
Actually, Odesk is great, especially I think for freelancing as well, because they actually have it set up too, so that if you're in California, the taxes are a lot easier. They do a lot of that stuff for you,
and then you can like have hour logging too, so it's you can prove that I worked 10 hours on this and that you owe me for all 10 hours.
My hours have, like, every time, like, if I'm doing 2D work, I have, like, I have to, like, manually put that one in and just say I'm doing 2D work.
Oh, right, because you're Well, actually, that's a good question. So do you do a lot of your 2D work on paper and pencil?
Yeah, I do. A lot of my concept 2D work I like to do on paper and pencil and pen.
So why don't you like doing digital?
For the line work, I don't like doing digital because I don't have a Cintiq. Because I like to have that pen in my hand and I like to just be drawing with using my whole arm.
Do you have any kind of tablet?
I do have a tablet.
You just don't have that, like, tablet screen.
And yeah, I don't have the nice tablet screen. I loved
working. So you don't like that disconnect? Is that what's...
Yeah, for me, with the line work, it's the disconnect. I like working with a pen on a surface. Mm-hmm. And that surface can be... I have worked on a Cintiq before, and I really enjoyed it. working on the tablet to the side of the computer... doing the line work is just not nearly as easy. I'm a lot slower. So I'm like, let me just do it on paper. I'll scan it in. And then I color on the computer.
So, yeah. So like when you're done with the sketch completely, mm-hmm. that's when you digitize it?
Yeah.
Do you then go over and clean up the lines digitally or do you do that by hand as well?
I generally ink by hand. If I'm going to do black lines mm-hmm. or anything, I ink it by hand as if I were doing a comic book or something like that. And I bring it into the computer and I can select all those lines and make them digital lines so that I can change the colors however I want them to. And I can do all sorts of digital effects in the computer. But I'd like to do all my line work by hand. And the color I do on the computer.
So do you think that that's slower than doing it digitally, but you like your work better, or do you think you work faster that way?
I work faster. I work a lot faster. To give you an idea, I can pencil and ink one of my own comic pages by hand in about 4 to 5 hours, one of my own, where mm-hmm. I don't have to get any approval on any of the pictures. But if I do it in the computer, I'm looking at 10 to 12 hours to do those lines.
Wow. Like, is that just because you're not practiced with the tablet?
Yeah. I'm not nearly as fast with the
tablet. So you think like if you were able to afford a Cintiq, your process would switch and you'd be able to do that in like 5 hours?
If I were to get a Cintiq, I probably would still do a lot of my comic.
Or, you know, some other equivalent brand.
Yeah.
Cintiq's got the whole band-aid.
Cintiq's got everything.
The screen that you can draw
on. That I could draw on. Yeah. I would probably do a lot of sketching in Photoshop. I probably would end up doing a lot more pictures in Photoshop. And I don't know if I would do a comic book yet because I would have to get used to the sketching part and that sort of thing. But... I don't know if I'd do like the full finished stuff yet. A lot of people just really like working with the brush. I haven't found yet a tool that feels like my brush that I use. I use an inking brush that is very commonly used with inking comics.
So tell me about like other effects. Like, is it just that brush feel and that texture you're putting on your lines, or is there other stuff that you think is a lot easier to do in a physical medium?
For me, well, the weight, certainly, like how heavy do I want the line? How thin do I want the line is a lot easier to do in the digital medium. In the traditional medium than the digital medium. Also I fall into a trap in the digital that I will try and fix everything that's imperfect.
Oh yeah. Cause you have the power to undo.
I have the power to erase perfectly. And I have the power to undo. And I know that I've been spending a lot of time on the computer. If I'm traditionally doing something and I reach for Control Z or Control S and I'm like, oh, I've been doing a lot of digital work recently. And so with when I'm on the computer, I'm always trying to fix line work. When I'm doing it traditionally, I rarely fix it. There's very little whiteout that I use. I was taught by Mick Gray, who inks for DC on Batman now, Batman and Robin, I believe.
Nice.
And he fixes very little of his inks, and I kind of learned from him and took my inks into that area.
Cool. So what projects are you working on right now? You have the Azar Media Group, you have the freelance stuff. Like, what's the next stuff that we're going to see come out for you?
What's the next stuff? So you're going to see Candy Cave come out soon.
Cool. I don't know. Where can we find more about that?
You can find that. They've got a Facebook page mm-hmm. As well as a website. And so the Facebook is Candy Cave, facebook.com/CandyCaveExplorers.
Candy Cave Explorers with an S.
With an S on the end.
All right. And show notes, our link will be in the show notes as well.
Yeah. And I can't remember their webpage, but I can certainly look that up and give it to you to put into the links and stuff.
Cool.
But that's going to be coming out. Pixel Sunrise is working on a game, and we're pretty solid with that one.
PIXELSUNRI.SE.
Yes. And that one we should be announcing, I hope, pretty soon. And by pretty soon, I hope that I'll be able to bring out some of the promotional art and some of the in-game art in like a month or two.
And that'll be like your third project?
Yeah.
Or at least your third announced one.
It'll actually... Yeah, it'll be our third announced one.
But you've done like some prototypes behind the scenes.
Yeah, we've done some stuff behind the scenes that nobody's gotten to see, which is unfortunate because they're beautiful.
Very cool.
But we'll be bringing that out. And then I'm also doing my own comic, which I'm almost finished with chapter
Dead
one.
Dead Hand Used Bookstore.
And that... should be, fingers crossed, the first chapter should be available at conventions and stuff mid-February. So that's really exciting for me. I'm hoping to bring, fingers crossed, volume one out sometime this year, which is a
big project. I don't know how many hours a week you're working, but if you told me if it was over 90, I'd believe you. Like, oh, I'm up till 2. I wake up at 8. You need a break.
I'm going to be going to a couple of conventions in Portland and Washington, and I love conventions because they are kind of like a break for me. I just get to hang out.
Yeah, but working at a convention shouldn't be your vacation.
It shouldn't be your vacation.
Like that's a good thing, but like it's shouldn't be like, oh yeah, my vacation is I worked this convention.
You know, conventions don't really feel too much like work for me, but I guess I can see that.
Yeah, that's true. They're really fun.
They're really fun. And luckily, I haven't gotten the convention flu, you know, in a really long time.
Oh, that's impressive.
I know, it is.
Yeah, those nerd conventions are notorious for
conventions are notorious for flu. It. I have found... hand sanitizer is very helpful with avoiding the flu. Just don't let people see you hand sanitize your hands after shaking their hand.
I mean, you can kind of understand if I see that, I'm like, oh yeah, that person's smart.
Yeah.
Can I have some too?
Yeah. Would you like some hand sanitizer as well? Yeah. So I generally keep a bottle of hand sanitizer behind my desk because I get sick very easily. I have asthma, and so I've got
If you haven't got the con flu.
I haven't gotten the con flu because I've been very careful with it.
Very vigilant.
Very vigilant. I always wash my hands before eating, like three times over, because I'm like, any way that I could possibly get sick, I really try and avoid that. I most amount of sickness I'll get from doing a convention is like I'm tired. So I'm gonna rest today, and it's not really sick.
But makes sense. Do you get a chance to like play games at all? And you know that like time, like I know at the end of the show I was like to talk about, you know, games people have played recently, but so like sounds like you have no time for anything fun.
I so rarely get to play games. It makes me sad. I actually,
besides games you're working on, obviously,
kind of a funny story. I didn't really play very many games as a kid growing up, or many video games. I played board games and made board games with my uncle. But
I'm a huge fan of board games.
I loved board games. So I didn't play very many as a kid, so I don't feel too sad that I don't play a ton right now. I recently played, I want to call it, it's something... I don't remember. It's Majing is in the word. It's in the title. And it's basically this big mythical creature called the Majing. And you are this little thief. And you're working with him. And it's a one-player game on the Xbox 360. And I can find the title for you and so that you can let people know.
But he'll tell, so like you I've been go playing around and it's a, is it like a downloadable title or is it this
no,
game?
No, it's one that I picked up at GameStop because I thought the cover was beautiful. And I was like, this is gorgeous. And it is. It's a beautiful game. And
you know what year it came out?
No, I don't know.
Like 5 years ago, like 10 years ago.
No.
How long was Xbox out? It's been out for a while now, right? Not 10 years.
The Xbox 360?
Is it 10 years now? No, not yet. Close to it.
But, yeah, I guess. I don't know. It's not very old. It's the graphics are very good.
Okay.
And I would compare them to today's stuff and say that they're very good. So I'm surprised that it didn't make as big of waves, I think, probably because the title's hard to remember.
So you don't really, like, you know, you picked up this game, you found it at GameStop. Do you do that often where you pick up old games, or is that, like,
yeah,
a special
I generally
thing?
Like, if I pick up a game, it's because the cover has really caught my eye as an artist, and I'm like, ooh,
interesting.
Beautiful.
Like, you know,
I totally judged
a book by its cover.
Yeah, I totally have always judged books by their cover every single time.
That is a good point that you need a good cover.
That's why I didn't read Harry Potter when it first came out.
Really?
I hated the cover.
They do have kind of sucky covers. Like, I'm sure there's an artist out there and she's good and all that, yeah. But it's like, especially that third book. Like, I didn't get into Harry Potter until the fourth book came out. I looked at the third book, and we were like trying to put it in my hands back then, and it was like,
I only got into it because my friend handed it to me after she got it from her grandmother, and she said, you have to read this. And I said, I didn't want to. I didn't like the
cover.
Was
this like, what, was this when the first book came out?
It was the first book had come out.
So you were a hardcore fan than me.
I was one of the first people who knew about it here in the U.S. We didn't know anybody else had been reading it until people started, like, slyly mentioning.
You're like, oh, gee, I got a first print.
No, I got the first print, man. Yeah. No, I don't have a first print. I do have the British copies now because I like their covers a bit better.
Oh, cool. Interesting that they're different.
Yes, they're all different in every different country, different cover.
Yeah, interesting. I wonder what the reasoning behind that is, besides just stylistic.
I don't know. But you can get some. There's some that are really hideous. They're just like, what were you thinking? So I totally judge games also by their covers. And I'll play them if I think the art's good. If I don't like the art, if it's not pleasing to me, I will leave the game. And I have seen really simplistic ones that are just it's black and white. I think it's called KLOM on Kongregate. It's a free game that mm-hmm. you can just play on Kongregate. It's black and white, and you're this little pixel robot boy that runs around everywhere. But I like it. It's pretty enough for me. And it's simple. It's really simple. Like, that kind of
artwork. Yeah, it doesn't have to be that, you know, 100 artists, you know, 18 months to be impressive.
Yeah. So, however, I can't seem to get into the original Mario games. They were just not pretty enough. I'm like, what?
I think a lot of that is nostalgia. So if you were just like not,
yeah, no,
you didn't grow up with that.
I wasn't allowed to play those games when I was a kid.
And it's so interesting that you've done pixel art and all that too, and don't have that pixel art background.
Yeah, I don't have pixel art background. I don't have,
because like a lot of that appeal is like that retro look.
I feel bad that like all my friends are like, oh, the nostalgia, and I'm just like, I'm not feeling it.
Yeah, you're like, I'm faking it. I'm doing it for pay.
Man, isn't that everything? No. Yeah, okay. I actually really think that there are some beautiful pixel art games, and so seeing them is really cool. So I find time on my phone. That's where I play most of my games. I've been playing tiny.
Yeah, I think it's part of it's the modern era because, you know, mobile industry is huge. But another part of it is that, like, we're graduated from college now. We're adults. You know, our time is like we're in line at the store and we can pull out a game.
Exactly. For me right now, it's a totally tiny Death Star because I get to be I imagine that I'm Darth Vader.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, yeah, I'm Darth Vader. I'm running the Death
Star. That is a very beautiful pixel art game, too.
It's beautiful. I love the artwork on it. There's a couple of the rooms I wish I could destroy. But all of my little bitizens look different from each other, and I love that I can just kind of scroll through and try and find one that I like the look of. I know some people are like, what, you can change the bitizens? Yeah, you can change the ones that moved in. I figured that out pretty quickly.
So you got, like, you're pretty enough to live in that little world.
Some of my bitizens are completely themed with the rooms that are there.
Can you customize them, or you just like wait for the random
generator?
You just wait
for the random one to come up that you like.
And then you're like, you're pretty enough to be chosen by Darth Vader. And then you're too ugly. You go down to that pit with the monster.
Or you're just too plain, man. Or what is up with that hairstyle? Get out of here.
Nice. Have you played Brothers: Tale of Two Sons?
I have not gotten to play it yet. I want to.
My game this week, I replayed that.
Yeah.
Because I was showing a friend it, and he played it for a little bit. Then he stopped and like, okay, I got to replay it from the start. Because it's so beautiful. Absolutely have to take the time, because you would love it.
It's one that is on my list of games.
Like, it's beautiful from a storytelling point of view. It's beautiful from a cinematography point of view. Like, it very much feels like a film.
Yeah.
It's great from a gameplay point of view. It has, you know, a somewhat unique mechanic that's interesting and compelling. That is just a beautiful, beautiful game. And so I was replaying it and enjoying it.
Yeah. No, it's on my list. I have a long list of games that I really want to play.
You should make that number one on your list. Like, another reason is that, like, you can get through the whole thing in, like, four hours.
I do have to say that I love then I want to play Journey. I've watched Journey.
You know, Journey's really good, and I will say nothing but positive things about Journey. And Journey is very high up on that list of something you must play.
Yeah.
Brothers is more important.
Brothers is higher.
Higher on that list for me. Well, wait, did you play Flower?
No, I'm not.
Well, Journey just got bumped up a little bit because, if you haven't played any of the company games. Uh-huh. But I like Brothers.
Yeah.
Both of them are good games. You should go out there. Like, everyone listening, just play both of those.
I have a really strange thing. I don't watch too many Let's Plays on YouTube or anything, but I enjoy watching my friends play all the games that I ought to be playing because I can draw while I'm watching them, and they're taking, like, the Let's Plays are all edited down, so it's, like, really fast, and they're showing you the best moments that are explosions, and I'm like, what? But I love watching my friends play them, which is weird. I'm like, I am a game watching voyeur.
That's a very big cultural phenomenon. I mean, people always like watch their siblings play games or watch their friends, but like now with the whole YouTube Let's Play and Twitch sharing, it's becoming more of a mainstream thing. I like to watch someone else.
Well, so when I was a kid, the one that I do feel some nostalgia over is those Sonic games from way back when I was little, because my friend had Sonic games, but she would not let me play them because I could not do very well. And she just didn't have the patience. She was 2 years older than me. And so she would play the Sonic games and I would watch her play the Sonic games. And I was like, yeah, I'm like Tails, just coming along for the ride. But I enjoyed, I think that's where I just get this. I figured out a way to enjoy watching the games get played and feel like I'm still part of it.
Very, very cool. So you're not open for commission right now, but where can we find like some of your work or portfolio?
You can find my online gallery at ameliadraws.com. And I do have a DeviantArt account. I actually find that's really useful for artists to bounce things off of.
What's your username on DeviantArt?
Amelia D. Draws. I'm Amelia D. Draws almost everywhere except on Facebook, which I'm Amelia D. Draws Art. And on Twitter, I'm just Amelia Davis because I got an early Twitter account.
Nice. So that was nice to get your name. I'm Tobiah Marks on Twitter. There's also my blog at Tobiah Marks on Twitter and tobiahmarks.com. My blog has a bunch of resources for indie game developers. You can go to beindienow.com to get more episodes of the podcast where you can find show notes. I will try to put many of the links we talked about today because you have just all sorts of different projects you worked on. So I'll try to list a couple of them at least. On there. If you have any questions for the show, suggestions, or you want to be on the show, you can email the show@beindienow.com. Thank you very much, Amelia, for coming in and talking with me today.
Thank you for having me.
Go out there and make some games.